Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Wayne Klingman, your host of the Milwaukee Mob. And everybody, stand up. Please get drink in hand, because we have with us probably one of the premier leaders of true crime podcasting in the known world today. In fact, the only people who know more than he does about true crime is probably either A, an FBI hiding to protect themselves, or in graves because they know way too much. And with that, we bring you the very famous, the very good, the very cool, the very fantastically cool, good-looking man I can only call the captain from, yes, you have it right, the True Crime Podcast called True Crime Garage. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you.
Well, thank you. So let me move back behind my couch so I can't be seen anymore. So why don't we start off the show about your background and a little bit what got you interested in doing true crime stuff.
Well, I'm 35 now. I have known Nick, the other co-host, for years. I mean, since we're in elementary school, and he's always been into it. And because I'm a musician by trade, and so I was traveling all the time, and I had one of my cousins tell me, you should check out podcasts, you're driving so long. And so I was listening to some podcasts. And then Nick got into podcasts, and he would invite me over to his garage, because when you play music, you know, you work all the every weekend, so you kind of start losing touch with friends. But every time we'd get together, we'd have a couple beers in his garage, and if we weren't talking about music, it turned into true crime. And I started getting into a lot of coast-to-coast shows, the radio show Coast to Coast. And so then I'd call him out of the blue. And we're coming up on a year anniversary of the show. And but about 6 months, a year and 6 months ago, we said, let's do a podcast. And Nick was the one that said, I could talk about true crime every week. And me not be, I mean, I'm fascinated with true crime, but it wasn't the first, if you listen to the first six episodes or so, I constantly say, I'm not a true crime fan, you know, necessarily. And now, 60 episodes later, I've dove in and looked at so many cases. But my background's music and my background's audio engineering. So when he said, let's try to do a podcast, I looked at that as just a, you know, recording challenge, you know.
Huh, fascinating. Fascinating. I come at this from film, and I'm fascinated by film and how it tells story. And what got me interested in true crime is we think the houses around us are Joe, you know, the old June Cleaver sort of thing, and Wally, and everything's happy, happy. But
yeah,
look at things closely, that's far from the case.
Yeah, and that's actually, you know, funny that you bring that up, because that's kind of Nick's story. Nick's story was, you know, really into, I remember on the bus, him, you know, driving to school third grade, and him saying, did you see the last night's Unsolved Mysteries? And talking about Loch Ness Monster and stuff like that. But Nick talks about a story that happened in Columbus, Ohio, that's where we're from, that, and he was young, I mean, elementary school, and he remembers reading this story, and it was kind of this pivotal moment for him where he realized, well, the whole world is not okay, and there are these monsters out there, these real-life human monsters, and that's kind of what got Nick into it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, for every Frankenstein and Werewolf, you know, master movie out there, there's got to be 20 H.H. Holmes. There has to be a, you know, several Jack Ripper types walking the streets today.
Yeah.
And truly, I don't think we should hide in our basements in fear, but we need to be, in my opinion, more aware of what's going on in society around us.
Yeah, and I think the thing when you see a lot of these cases, some of the cases, the victims had, there's nothing that they could do, but I think by understanding what is happening as far as this true crime world, you can really kind of set yourself up, you know, as far as protection, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, not going out alone, making sure people know where you're at. That's a lot easier now too with social media and the fast communications through technology.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, even here, I live in Racine, Wisconsin, which is a 70,000-plus community. You don't think anything weird would happen. But within a year period, our mayor got thrown in prison for having his own little problem with children. He served 3 years. And next door to where I live, one of the roommates decided to bring home someone for a bar and chop them up like hamburger.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't think these things would happen, but sadly, they do. They do.
I was going to say one of the arguments, and one of the things that I think on a daily basis is, are we glorifying these crimes? And you know, we really try to make sure that we don't glorify it, because I think when you start looking into some of these. Just take serial killers, Jeffrey Dahmer, Gacy, Bundy. There's sites that we have people on Instagram that follow us that their whole Instagram page is dedicated to these serial killers. And our goal is never to glorify it, because, you know, what these people did was they robbed people of their lives. They robbed people of their chance to make a positive mark in the society.
Absolutely. I know there's a great film on Netflix, of course, now I can't remember the title of it, where the director, some guy that did the movie H.H. Holmes, by the way, Jan Rudelski, great filmmaker, talks about serial killer world. And there's a group of people who have... I don't want to say glorifying, I don't want to say that, but live in that world. They collect the mail, they collect the artwork, they collect the writings, they've gone to crime scenes and taken pictures of the places where these things have happened. They've gotten bricks and mortar from nearby homes and the like, because they're into that. And sometimes, well, people are into different things, it's not my concern, kind of. But second,
right.
It makes me kind of think, what's up with that?
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, if you talk, you know, Nick's the real true crime buff of the group, and he has gone, I mean, that's how we met some of the authors that we've interviewed. He's gone to book readings. He's gone to crime scenes. He's doing it more of trying to understand it. I think it crosses the line when people are, I mean, just we did the Aurora shooter, the Aurora Theater shooter case this week. And one of the things that we didn't really dive into is, and his first initial interviews from jail, almost everybody talked about he has hundreds and hundreds of pictures of women on his wall that these women were writing to him and sending, risque sexy pictures to him. That's odd, that's an issue with society, you know.
It is. I mean, either looking for a relationship with someone they can never go anywhere with because they're safe, or is it the bad boy? You know, the safe bad boy they can have. I don't know. It's interesting. I know. It's my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. That the podcasts that do the more serial killing of the more graphic nature, especially of sexual perverts, have a huge following from women. And if that's true, and I have no reason to doubt that it is, right? That's
yeah.
weird.
Yeah, Well, we have listeners that will, they enjoy the conversation. They enjoy that they're learning about a case. It's something they're fascinated in, but they enjoy our personalities. They also enjoy that we're normally not that graphic because, again, we're not trying to glorify it. There's other shows that kind of glorify it, and they also try to push the button, and it's their right to. They're trying to entertain. Their goal, it's just like a gore film. My favorite horror film would be Silence of the Lambs because it's a psychological. And then there's, I got a buddy that loves the first initial remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
There you go.
I like the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre because, again, it wasn't as gory. It's more psychological. The gore stuff doesn't get me. And I think that's some of these podcasts, they're going for a gore factor, and they have every right to. I do find it a little strange where people kind of get off on this idea.
Yeah, again, now that we're crossing technology from film to the podcast, which I think is really the conversation, is in film it would be, say, as torture porn, is torture porn lazy filmmaking, which is an argument. Are these graphic shows entertaining, doing the easiest way to grab an audience? I don't know. It's everybody's choice to watch or hear what they like to. It's just more fascinating to me is what drives an audience.
Well, I mean, coming from the musician background, one of the things that I always was frustrated with, as you know, you take like something like jazz, which is an American art form. You know, one of the only true American art forms is jazz. It's less than 1% of the music production that comes out. It's less than 1% that people consume this art form. And I think sometimes with society, and I don't think we teach this in schools, and I don't think we teach this to our kids, but sometimes the harder thing to get into, that harder novel to read, that harder, maybe a little artsier film to watch, there's more gratification afterwards. And I think we're kind of heading down this path of instant accessibility and let's not do anything hard, you know?
Right. Well, again, that goes to the point of if we try new things or try risky things, then the haters will show up and they'll say something mean. And sometimes, as I suspect we all know, the guy out there, the one out there with not the time in their hands, an internet connection, can really say some hateful things. So I can understand people don't want to try new stuff, out-of-the-box stuff, but yet that would be challenging. And there's some good podcasts. There are. I mean, you guys have one. I like Crimeland, Wire a lot, are really good ones, right? And there's always room for more. But, yeah, I like to see people be challenging. I'm always open to – I have a film background, like I've said a couple of times. If somebody has an idea and they need help, I'm open to being contacted and say, hey, Wayne, this is my idea. Can you give me a hand with it? I'll be the first to say, yeah, sure, what can I do to help? Is that my philosophy? But before we forget, we should find out where we can find you online, sir.
It's pretty easy. Go to truecrimegarage.com. Also, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, all that stuff, @truecrimegarage.
Okay, thank you. I should find out how you actually do Snapchat. My grandkids do it. I can't figure it out. I understand what it's about, but that's me.
We kept on having so many listeners saying, are you on Snapchat? Are you on Snapchat? And when we first started, our thought was we're going to have a website and we're going to do zero social media. And we had no clue what our numbers were as far as if people were listening to the show or not for the first, probably 6 months. So it just kind of slowly, let's get on Twitter. Then that turned into Instagram, turned into Facebook. And then I do Snapchats and I don't do them as often, but I used to wake up and do these like 2-3 minute rants about nothing. But I don't know how to check people's Snapchat. I don't know how to do any of it. I just know how to upload a video and be on my way.
There you go. That works too, because that's a good idea. Right, and you can't do them all. I don't know what I'm doing. And I find Facebook Live to be fascinating because it allows me to sit there after I've had way too much caffeine and turn on that camera and rant away.
Yeah, it's I think with social media, I think with all, like you said, I mean, there's haters, you know, and it's easier to hate from a social media standpoint. I feel like I got lucky because we started putting out shows. The show was getting good reviews, but me on the show was getting awful reviews. So really having to kind of dive back into some kind of interpersonal psychology and just realize none of this matters, you know, and you can't listen to the people that are, you know, just trying to break you down for no reason.
And we don't know why they do that. To me, criticism of someone else is not, it depends. I mean, I know my spelling sucks, my grammar is horrible. I know that. I know it's reflected in my show notes. I know that. If you want to hate me for that, you're always telling me something I already know. Fine. Have a nice day. But if someone wants to call me up and say, hey, Wayne, I know you're using Blog Talk Radio for your shows. This might be another platform you can use that's easy and simple and not very costly. That's a criticism I want to learn about because I want to be better as I can be. Calling me, I suck with my spelling. I know that, bud. I know my voice sucks too, right? What else do you want to tell me? I'm fat. I know that as well.
The tough thing is when people are saying, "Oh, I hate this guy," and my sister, I have a baby sister. She's not a baby anymore, but she's still my baby sister. But she was reading the reviews, and she thought it was hilarious because some of these people criticizing our show was saying, these guys are just some stupid frat boys. And if anybody knew me and Nick, they'd go, these guys are pretty far from being fraternity brothers, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, but I think some of these you just have to brush off. And Colin Cowherd said something, the sports radio guy, and he said something that I think back to is, if you're right about something, you're going to get some calls. But if you're wrong about something, you're going to get way more calls. And I think some of it is just, you know, in the time that's allotted, do your best and then step away from it. And if people hate on it, it's okay, you know.
Yeah, because we're doing it, they're not, and it goes to the idea of being the trust agent, being the expert, is I find this fascinating. I find that somebody out there with regular output, right, if I listen to it, I'm gaining information I didn't know before. If all of it is entertainment, that works too, because they're giving me entertainment that I'm consuming, right? It's helping me fill my day versus look at four walls, and the world's a better place. And I'm all about making the world a better place whenever I can.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, after a couple episodes and getting bombarded with the show's good, but this captain guy is awful. He needs to go. What I realized is I was constantly getting people that reached out and said, you know, oh, you're my favorite person on the show, the weirdest thing is when they say, oh, man, your voice is so sexy. And I'm like, what does that mean? My voice is awful, you know? Like, everybody hates their own voice, so when somebody's going, oh, it's sexy, you're like, no. I feel like my main motivation now, I mean, we're trying to go full-time. We're hoping to go to two shows a week starting in 2017, but my main motivation is I just know what podcasts and what radio meant to me when I was driving to work and when I was driving to these gigs and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I got 2 hours to get home and I'm exhausted and I'm lonely. You know, I'm in my car all by myself, lonely, and I pick up my phone and all Adam Carolla had a new episode, or Joe Rogan, or whoever it was,
mm-hmm.
I could click that button, and for 2 hours I'm entertained, and I'm not lonely, and that's my main goal for putting out the shows now. That's my main goal for wanting to do 2 episodes a week, is to, if I can help anybody get through their week or their work day, well, I'm doing something positive.
Absolutely, and I like podcasting because anybody can do it. You know, obviously anybody with equipment can do it. Blog Talk Radio is a cheap way, free, basically, way to do it for people who don't have a lot of money like me. And people can take it as it comes. And I find what I'm really enjoying out of a lot of the true crime shows I listen to is the information out there that's being presented. Like, God, I forgot the name. We were just talking about the poor young man. That young man that was kidnapped. You know, whatever happened to Johnny, was the movie they made about him not long ago?
Yeah, Johnny Gosch. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. And the idea is that sparks the conversation with myself and others, is, as we discussed off air for a bit, was the fact we do have a problem with human trafficking in this country, and what the hell are we going to do about it?
Yeah. Well, and the weird thing about that documentary, it's now on Netflix. The documentary is called Who Took Johnny? So if anybody's interested in that, check that out on Netflix. But that documentary was released in 2013. So it's now getting new life 3 years later by being on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
This conversation is now getting new life from our podcast, from other podcasts, anybody that's covering this case. And it's about a newspaper boy that went missing in 1983, which I was a newspaper boy myself. But all this stuff applies to the same stuff today. And I think one of the things that you could learn about this particular is, one, I mean, the police were saying instantly, this kid's a runaway. And I think it's a good tale of what not to do as a police department and what to,
yeah,
what good to do as a parent.
Yeah.
And should we let our kids play outside? I think so. I think we can't be afraid of the boogeyman or they win ultimately. But we need to educate ourselves on this, you know.
Absolutely.
And there's a big debate whether or not this kid was, you know, abducted by a sex trafficking ring, or if it was just a single individual. I don't know if we'll ever.
Right, and I would hope that one day we do know. Ultimately, what I find fascinating, and I'm a conspiracy buff as well, which does not bode well with true crime stories, but sadly I am, is when you get into the whole thing with that bank as well gets involved in kind of sort of weird ways, the number of interesting suicides that happen with people that are connected to the case, it gets you thinking. And now here in Racine, we have one of the members of the Johnson's family that was accused of doing horrific acts with his 14-year-old stepdaughter. And then near the Johnson Bank's headquarters, there's a secret bar that you have to have keys to get in. And the stories that run around here, and you think what you hear about the bar is not true because rumors fly, especially in the wealthy and well-to-do. But always in the back of your mind, you're thinking, what's truly going on anymore?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the funny thing is, you know, it's people go, oh, you must be really into true crime. I'm probably more into the conspiracy side of things, and probably one of the reasons why I found the Johnny Gosch case so fascinating. Because, I mean, like, one of the things that is odd is there's a picture of George Bush, you know, George Bush Sr., you know, shaking hands with a bunch of kids, and on the back behind him, there's this kid, you know, this is a couple of years later, after Johnny went missing, there's a kid behind George Bush that kind of looks like Johnny. So I think there's a big disconnect now between regular folks and the elite.
Yep.
But it's our job to hold these people accountable.
Absolutely. And that's one thing we can do. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, sir.
No, go ahead.
One of the things we can do as I believe in very much in grassroots journalism. I think grassroots journalism is important to tell the stories of what goes on in our community and things that we see, such as in Racine. You know, within the city of Milwaukee, we have bars, and we've talked about this off there too, is the number of women that are placed by different organizations, right, which might be human trafficking. We have a hotel in Racine that's gotten nailed several times for having human trafficking and running hookers out of there, right? So why haven't they been shut down? Is it because they belong to the right organizations? Is it because they're good campaign contributors to the mayor? You don't know. But these questions won't be asked by the local paper. It's up to people like you and I, potentially, to ask those questions.
Well, yeah, and I think some of it is that, you know, everybody wants, you know, equal rights for men and women and all that stuff. But I think all I can do is, I'm a white male in America, and all I can do is my part. And I think part of that part is to step up and be a man. You know, protect women, try to protect women, try to protect children, stand up to people. And look, I mean, they can have all the money in the world, but if you put public pressure, enough public pressure, and that's, I mean, you see, and look, I don't want to get into politics too much, but there was enough public pressure on the FBI to reopen the Clinton emails case.
Yep.
Whether it's right or wrong, see what the pressure can do, you know, and that's what we have to do. It's just like the Vanishing Women's case in Chillicothe. This town, Chillicothe, is a very small town in Ohio, very Leave It to Beaver type town, and they got a huge problem with drugs. They got a huge problem with women going missing, women getting hooked on drugs, and then becoming prostitutes because of this. This is a very small town. In a smaller town that's not connected to all these other big towns, other than by a few highways, this stuff should be controlled. You should be able to rally the community. Because it's not going to start from, you know, it might start from the mayor. But the mayor don't care. The mayor's the mayor, and he might care a little bit, but if he's making money and his family's doing well, what does he care? And these police officers and all this stuff, and they know where they're at. Why aren't you arresting this and stopping this, cleaning up your streets? But we can't put the blame on the people at the top. We have to start with ourselves.
You said so much, and now I'm going to have to do another show with you talking about this some more. And the little English lady just gave me a countdown. I hate her sometimes. Because it does start with us. We need to educate ourselves, and it shows like you do and other people do that are the Crime Line Wire, again, with you educate people to understand what's going on around them, and maybe you go to that city meeting. Maybe you make that phone call. You write the letter to the editor and say, what the hell is going on here that starts the snowball rolling? Because, sir, in my opinion, if we only sit in our homes and do nothing, we get to what's coming. It's only by when we stand up, understand what's going on around us, by such things as your podcast and other things out there, that we can begin to make a difference, sir.
Yeah, and that's kind of my thought process. You know, everybody's up in arms now with the new president-elect. But to me, it was a time to reflect and say, it doesn't matter if it's Trump or if it's Clinton, what can I do as a person? And there's big issues, yes, but I think it also starts with the idea of, let me hold that door for that couple coming out. Let me be a little more polite. And if we start that more of a positive type movement, trying to be more positive towards people, trying to uplift people and not tear people down, then maybe we get somewhere.
Absolutely, sir. Let's have your website one more time, because a little English lady says I have to go and she's going to shoot me.
It's a truecrimegarage.com. and social media, everything, Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram is all at True Crime Garage.
Thank you so much for your time. I've enjoyed talking to you a great deal. It's been a lot of fun. I do hope you come on the air with me again soon, because I'd like to talk more about the conspiratorial nature of some stuff going on today.
Definitely, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Oh, pleasure is mine. Thank you again, sir. Bye-bye. Well, that's all the time that we have today. We've been kicked off there by the little English lady, and I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.